All right, our second case for this morning is National Steel Corporation against the NLRB. And we have Mr. Collins.
Your Honors, Dennis Collins, representing National Steel Corporation. What I would like to do is present in 10 minutes and reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Pay attention to your white light.
I shall.
Do that.
This case before us, I'd like to break it into a couple of general background questions. Secondly, summarize our arguments, and third, kind of point out some policy considerations. I think what's important to realize in this particular case is that National Steel is a large corporation, and we took it for granted city location. We have 3,000 employees, which are comprised of both union and non-union employees, and we have 1,540 acres, so it's a sizable corporation down there in Granite City, Illinois. What I also like to highlight to the court, okay, is the fact that we're frequented by our facility not only by union employees, non-union employees, but we have visitors to the premises, we have suppliers, vendors, et cetera. And when we looked at what's different about this particular case is before we will install the hidden cameras, we make a good faith investigation as to what should be done as far as eliminating safety, security, theft considerations. And theft is a big, big consideration with regard to the National Steel situation because of copper and the aftermarket and that.
Sure.
When we do...
Could I just interrupt for a minute, though, because it seems to me that the logic of your principal position is that you have unfettered discretion as a management issue to put these cameras wherever you want, whenever you want. And that, as I understand it, is your attack on Colgate-Palmolive. Then you have a backup position that says, well, we're reasonable about this. We don't put them in unless we've got good cause and we target them properly and we limit their use and so on. But even to take that step suggests to me that there, particularly in light of what the board said, that there is a legitimate union concern for bargaining, for how are these cameras going to be used? Will they be used? Must they be used under procedures similar to the ones that you say that you're voluntarily following or not? Because the board's order is actually a far more restrained order than one might think from reading your brief.
Well, to us, I mean, I guess with regard to our position on unfettered right, I do think I think what the board has overlooked, okay, in its Colgate-Palmolive decision, is the rationale is dictated by the Supreme Court in First Maintenance Corporation, which really says, let's look at the real fundamental purpose of collective bargaining. Is there some input, okay, that a union can have? And I submit to you that there's really no input that someone can have from the union side with respect to the hidden cameras, because it's just basic purpose there. And if you take a look at the Eighth Circuit case on Montgomery Ward, which is a 1946 decision by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and it should have been quoted in our brief, and it was not. But let me just share with you what is said there by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is a 1946 decision, which the National Labor Relations Board overlooks. There can be no reasonable objection to the surveillance of employees admittedly breaching company rules. We held in NLRB versus Brandeis that employing detectives to engage in surveillance of union representatives while in its store was proper in order to prevent them from interfering with employees at work.
Right, but see, here's why I have problems with the way you've structured your argument. Once you get to the point of agreeing that it's a targeted camera like the one in the manager's office for the man who was using the telephone in an unauthorized way, or the one that was focused on the place where the copper was being stolen. Sure, I mean, there's clearly, and a right recognized by the board in both Colgate-Palmolive in this case, a legitimate employer interest in ferreting out those situations, taking reasonable steps to address them, just as there is a legitimate employer interest in making sure employees aren't on drugs or other kinds of inappropriate things. It's it's not just information about where's the camera, which day, who installed it. It's under what circumstances will these devices be used? Is there any constraint? Because the employees, well, and the other thing, that I'm sorry to be mixing these things up, but the other thing is you're arguing both that there's an interest vis-a-vis your employees, and you're arguing that there's an interest vis-a-vis all others, you know, whether it's customers, supervisors, trespassers, et cetera, who come onto your plan. But staying with the employees for the moment, the court has recognized an employee interest in these things, and as I envision it, they're saying two steps have to take place. One, there has to be some sort of protocol that recognizes the legitimate employer interest in confidentiality. And then second, within the constraints of that protocol, there has to be some sort of bargaining.
Well, the question, the fundamental question which you address right off the bat, is this a subject of mandatory bargaining? And I submit to you under the first maintenance, okay, that this is not a mandatory subject of bargaining.
But if you have to bargain about drug testing, why don't you have to bargain about this?
I think that drug testing can be distinguished in four ways, okay? Number one is the fact that this is a business decision that must be made in order to run the employer's business.
Drug testing isn't? I'm sure you don't want people who are selling drugs or messed up on drugs on your work floor.
I think there's four, Your Honor, I think there's four distinctions. The first, in our opinion, okay, this is a legitimate business determination which must be made, and it must be made spontaneously pretty much. Number two, I think what you're really talking about is the union cannot offer any meaningful input, okay, into what the location of the hidden cameras are.
But why is it location that you think they need to talk about? Why not? Why wouldn't the union feel a lot better if you at least said, we won't put these permanently, we won't put them in the bathrooms, we won't put them in the showers? You might want them in the bathroom sometimes if you think somebody's smuggling something in that way.
Well, When I look at the whole thing, okay, and drug testing is a great thing, but it's the point as far as distinguishing. But again, you go back to the business termination. I think you go back to the fact that UNAC can offer any meaningful input. The very purpose of sitting down there and bargaining about locations, as the then chairman Hurtgen of the National Labor Relations Board said in his dissenting opinion, that's the very purpose.
And I understand, but you're sticking with locations, and if I say to you that maybe you might bargain about something other than the precise location of a given camera, you're at least not answering my question. And with all due respect to the chairman's dissenting opinion, I've written a few dissenting opinions myself in my day, and sadly enough, they aren't the law of the Seventh Circuit. I wish they were, but, you know, you have to take your lumps.
But you know, the drug testing also, because, I mean, that's the thing that we expect in the National Labor Relations Board. I'm a former NLRB person, and they've kind of gone astray on this particular case. but you know, what you really have is, you also don't have the privacy considerations. And really what all of ours is directed to on the fact that we're talking about cameras being displayed in open areas. I mean,
you don't know that, though. Suppose you thought somebody was smuggling something in via the restroom. Happens all the time in prisons, by the way. You know, people
sure.
will smuggle drugs in, and it's exactly the restrooms that need monitoring. Maybe there'll be privacy concerns sometimes. Maybe there won't be.
You know, in all due respect, Your Honor, there is nothing before the court, okay, with respect to restrooms. And if you take the Colgate-Palmolive case, which dealt with restrooms and a fitness center, and, you know, Colgate doesn't address, okay, the 1946 decision of the Eighth Circuit, okay, in the Quasite case, which is the old National Labor Relations Board case, okay, a 1994 decision, which Colgate came down in 1997, mm-hmm. The Quasite case, basically, if you look at the language in there, it says, hey, this employer has a legitimate purpose, therefore we're not going to find that to be something that needs to bargain about. I mean, when you take a look and what you're really, and what's to me from a philosophical standpoint, what's really difficult about this case, 85 to 90% of our workforce, okay, today is non-union. All right, if you take a look and take a look at the airport, take a look at this federal building, hidden cameras, take a look at the airport, take a look at supermarkets. I mean, the whole world is as a result of, you know, September 11th last year, has really,
Does that mean people have no interest in hidden cameras anymore?
Do I think, you know, when you talk about legitimate concerns about taking a look at, I think what you're in is a balancing test, okay?
Well, see, if you're in a balancing test, then why don't you need to bargain about it? As I began, I'm worried that your principal position strikes me as too broad, your Colgate itself is wrong position. And if it's a lesser position, then even if you can't bargain about particular investigations in particular locations, unless maybe there's like one designated person who's informed or something, I don't know what bargaining would wind up looking like, but there are other aspects of this that you're suggesting that make your company's policy a reasonable one in your view, and maybe it is. But it's the extreme position that worries me. And if something less than the extreme position is correct, then it strikes me that's exactly what the board was asking you to do. The board was recognizing your confidentiality interests.
I don't think the board was recognizing anything with regard to confidentiality. I mean, we're talking about a steelworkers union. You're talking about hardball playing with regard to the whole issue. And to us, I mean, we just have a fundamental right, I think, okay, as our first position, our fundamental right, okay, on a limited basis with regard to the situation of doing of the hidden cameras. I mean, if you take a look at the Colgate decision, this is totally different than the Colgate decision because, you know, we're talking about the hidden cameras seven times in a 13-year period. We're talking about a good company, good faith investigation, which is before the court. We're talking about a policy that was aimed not simply at union employees, okay, but it was aimed at everybody, okay, the visitors, vendors. We're talking about Colgate. There was a waiver issue, and it was just passing.
Yeah, can we talk about the waiver issue? Because don't we need more than the union's knowledge of past practices and acquiescence in the past? And is there any other evidence to support a finding of waiver?
Well,
don't we need something more than that?
I'll tell you, Your Honor, it's a good question. I mean, what you're talking about with regard to the waiver issue in this case, as opposed to the Colgate-Palmolive, case, the waiver issue was some passing comment that someone made. Here we have four written grievances. Okay, the 1998 grievance, okay, that was written and it's undisputed within the record, provides what? It's that the union challenged the fact that it was, you know, that it was we should pay back pay, okay, for a situation because they claim that they should have done the installation of the cameras as opposed to management people, and we denied.
Yeah, but how do you deal with the NLRB versus Roll case where we said that it doesn't amount to waiver if it does not unmistakably show the union intended to permanently give up its right to bargain in the future?
Well, I think with the Roe case, and you distinguish it, we're talking about a 13-year practice, okay, you know, in which on seven occasions it's done. We're talking about situations where, you know, there's no dispute in the record. Four written grievances were filed about this company's practice, Your Honor, and never was it raised with regard to the fact that the hidden cameras. I mean, it's there, and you know, when one of the things which I really want to highlight from a practical standpoint, if you deny our first position with regard to first maintenance, one of the things which you have to look in from a practical standpoint is this employee does have protection. This employee has access to the grievance procedure. This employee that was involved in this situation, this went to arbitration, okay? And this employee and the arbitrator, you know, looked at the facts and said, yes, we're going to admit this into the record, okay, the fact of the hidden camera. An arbitrator can balance, okay, whether we're doing something wrong. I mean, this situation is, when you do the balancing thing, I think it's very important to take into consideration the fact that this person is subject. This case went to arbitration. The arbitrator ruled that Colgate-Palmolive did not preclude the admission of the camera and evidence in the record, and this arbitration was heard. If you take that balancing, okay, and you take a look at where we are as far as sit down with a union and try to negotiate, okay, the location of hidden cameras, I mean, it is absolutely ludicrous, okay, to sit down and say
you
we're going to...
You have 1 minute left if you
okay,
well, have anything for rebuttal.
I'll say 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Your Honor.
Very good. Mr. Darius?
Good morning. My name is Eric Duryea, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board. I'm not certain that I can amplify much.
You can amplify for me what exactly you think the board thinks will be negotiated, will be discussed, exactly the question Mr. Collins has posed to you and to us.
Well,
what's left to bargain about?
Sure, I actually think that there is potentially a lot left to bargain about, suggested by your questions to Mr. Collins about whether or not these will be used, under what conditions they will be used, under at any time will they be used in areas where a privacy concern of the employees is implicated.
Well, that seems to be a substantial item there, but it's hard for me to see, if you're getting beyond the washrooms, what is the union interest in this matter?
Well, the union's interest in this matter is the board found that this is plainly germane to the workplace, and how it is germane to the workplace is because it is a investigatory technique that is used to discover, document employee wrongdoing, or at least potentially discover employee wrongdoing, and will
somebody's
presumably
wrongdoing
be.
Anyway.
I'm sorry?
Not necessarily employees.
Right, wrongdoing, but certainly, certainly with employees as one of the potential targets. And so this investigatory technique will obviously be implicated in disciplinary proceedings that arise from the use of this technique, of this device.
And bargaining over all disciplinary techniques is required?
Not
once
all
we call it a disciplinary technique or an investigatory technique,
sure,
perhaps, what's the duty to bargain over such things?
Well, I think that the plainly germane prong of the Ford Motor Company standard that the board applied here sort of set a limit to and sort of ruling out things that might be deemed trivial as to what sort of effect it makes on the terms and conditions of employees. So it's not the board's position here that any and all items that have any bearing on the disciplinary process at any time would necessarily be germane enough that it would count as a term and a condition of employment for purposes of mandatory bargaining. In this case, however, the connection seems to be fairly direct, and because of that, they found that this was plainly germane.
So wasn't the union asking for exactly the thing that Mr. Collins has argued it would be ridiculous to give, the exact locations of the cameras? The cameras become worthless once everybody in the plant knows that there's a camera focused on somebody's desk or some pile of, you know, old copper or whatever.
Sure. The union in this case actually requested all information pertaining to the use, installation and use of these cameras. I believe they did say we'd like to know the location as well, but it was not limited to that. It was a broad request for all information.
So what information do you think they might be, I mean, how would you envision, supposing we were to enforce this order, what happens next?
Well, I believe that something happens like the party sitting down, the company asserting the fact that, you know, sometimes there's wrongdoing that we want to catch on a hidden camera, and sometimes we want to use that. If we tell you with it where the hidden camera is going and when it's going to be on, that's going to defeat the purpose. What are we going to do about that? And the union and the company can perhaps negotiate some sort of confidentiality agreement as to the.
Now, what does that mean exactly? I mean, the president of the union can agree that if you tell him where the cameras are, he won't tell anybody else. Is that a confidentiality agreement?
I imagine that could be a confidentiality agreement that could be agreed upon.
But that violates his duty to his membership, doesn't it? I mean, membership certainly has an interest in where the hidden cameras are.
Right. Well, I think that in this case where you have a legitimate confidentiality interest by the employer in a mandatory subject of bargaining, that there have been cases in the past where adequate confidentiality or limited use of information provisions have been agreed to by the company and the union, and my sense is that sort of side agreement would sort of interpose between what might otherwise be thought to be the union president's duty to go out and tell all of its members, look, the camera's going to be on this time there, and would sort of
take
it.
Well, the next election, somebody's come along and say, well, I'll tell you where the hidden cameras are if you vote for me. I mean, that's the reality of governance of unions, isn't it?
Perhaps.
Pretty hard to deny things to the membership if it's in their interest to get them, I would think.
Well,
you mentioned there were other examples of this confidentiality agreement. What are they? You know, factually, what are they?
I actually don't know the specific instances in which this has been done, but I actually don't know off the top of my head, and I would be happy to find such cases and bring them to the court's attention.
Would the board agree that a company is entitled to refuse any measure that would completely defeat the purpose of the investigatory technique in question, such as, telling the entire plant where every hidden camera is at all times, or things that really do mean that you shouldn't even bother to start down this path? I mean, is it possible, in your view, to recognize some inherent rights on the part of the company, as long as the investigatory tool itself isn't, torture or some thing that we would recognize as evil in and of itself? Hidden cameras, it's hard to say that about, because as Mr. Collins points out, they're all over the place. I mean,
sure.
We're used to them, and so they have a proper use and an improper use. Is there some core of rights that the board would be willing to recognize companies have?
Well, I can say two things about that. First, I believe that the interest in using such cameras was explicitly acknowledged and deemed legitimate in both the Colgate-Palmolive case and this case. And second, in terms of what management's core rights would be in any bargaining over that, I would just quote this passage from Colgate-Palmolive. What we say here today, of course, has no bearing upon the content of any agreement or arrangement that may emerge from collective bargaining, nor does it address the employer's establishment of practices on the subject matter of surveillance cameras after having bargained to impasse.
Do you think within the scope of that language there could be an agreement between the union and the company that said, line one, we will never tell you the exact location and exact time of any particular camera, because that would compromise the use of the camera as an investigatory technique. But line two, we promise that we won't install them without probable cause or whatever,
I mean, it's
that
perfectly...
That would not be inconsistent, at least.
It's not inconsistent with the board's language here. It's not inconsistent with... It's perfectly possible under what the board is envisioning here.
The Colgate case, of course, came out of this washroom situation.
Right.
Which does, raise, it seems to me, of a legitimate privacy interest of the employees, which I think has to be recognized in some way or other. But when you get beyond that, that's where we get into this problematic area of what interests extend beyond the privacy interest.
Sure.
I don't know what those are.
Well, it is the board's duty to, in the first instance, be the body that applies its specialized expertise in order to unpack the language, terms, and conditions of employment in the Act and determine what sorts of specific situations that arise in particular labor disputes are going to be deemed included in that language. And the board's interpretation of that language here, as elsewhere, is subject to the review of this court and other courts, but it is a fairly deferential standard, and if it has a reasonable basis in, if it has a reasonable basis and it's not arbitrary and capricious, and then the determination is entitled to deference. And I would submit here that the rather direct connection between between the use of surveillance cameras and potential or actual discipline arising from evidence produced by these cameras is a sufficiently reasonable connection that the board was reasonably entitled to interpret this as falling within, excuse me, that language of the act.
Now, the rules about the guards having to be in separate unions from the production workers, is that statutory or is that the rule of the board?
Actually,
I thought it was statutory, but
9A, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It is?
Okay. Yeah,
that's part of my impression.
On the waiver question, counsel says, you know, the fact that there were four grievances filed is sufficient to show that it was more than just acquiescence. What's your view of that? Or your response?
Yes, that, I believe, is not correct. I believe that is far from a clear and unmistakable demonstration of the intent to waive the right to bargain, including the right to bargain for all time in the future. I don't think that the fact of those four grievances comes anywhere close to that, such a clear and unmistakable waiver. Moreover, the one thing that I would add is that under the facts of this case, the decision of the board, the Colgate-Palmolive decision, came to the union's attention fairly late in the game, and so during the processing of all of the previous grievances prior to the one from which this case arose, it wasn't even on the union's radar screen that this was a bargaining right that they had, and so there is no way that they could have they had no meaningful opportunity to request the right to bargaining. So in that case especially, it's hard to see how they could have unmistakably waived the right. And if no one has any more questions, I will sit down.
Thank you very much. Mr. Collins?
6 points. Number one.
I'll speak quickly.
It's not the record. Okay, the record is only all information concerning existing hidden cameras with no other request for bargaining. That was it. Okay, there was no request for bargaining. They just asked for that. Our response was, folks, that would defeat the very purpose. So what the NLRB has now represented as being the record is not the record. Number two, in response to your question, Your Honor, it is divided loyalty, and you're right on point. There is a separate unit. The reason why we have guards set up for a separate unit is because of the fact that they have a different view and different responsibilities, and that's why we need to have this hidden camera aspect of it, and it's statutory in answer to your question. The third point, quasi, which they have not answered at all, said with regard to the business, you know, with regard to the issue of hidden cameras, respondent had ample business justification for installing the cameras. That's an NLRB determination. They've offered no distinction. We go back to the Eighth Circuit point with respect there can be no reasonable objection to the surveillance of employees in the Montgomery case. We take a look at the Connecticut case, which is not obviously, and that points out right there that's not a subject of mandatory bargaining because of the issues that were presented in that case as opposed to Colgate-Palmolive. We live in a real world. The Labor Board does not live in a real world. If you take a look at what were these hidden cameras being installed for, who was stealing copper, who was creating a safety hazard by shutting down the company's production line, and who was creating a safety hazard by greasing railroad car handrails and foot rails and thereby creating safety concerns, and finally, who was vandalizing a door lock, okay, entering a supervisor's office, and racking up 293 hours of long-distance
bill. We're familiar with that part, Mr. Collins, but your time is up. Thank you very much.
Okay, listen, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.